remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, today I'm going to talk a little bit about forgiveness and beauty. Last week, Shinshu gave us a talk on specific practices and ways that in the midst of our daily lives that we can work with the difficulty and distress and contentiousness that we so often experience, pain and confusion and finding our way. And she gave us a list of things. She called it a laundry list. I didn't think it was much of a laundry list. I thought it was a wonderful list. So some of the things were meditation and prayer. Prayer meaning kind of recalling ourselves to our practice and our remembering to return to interconnection, loving-kindness, our intention, offering incense or flowers, chanting, these specific gifts that we have from our tradition, the ritual and the beauty and the ways that we have that we can actually enact in our daily lives. The simple practice of pausing to stop and breathe and just gain some perspective. The intention to accept our lives and face our lives as they are, to grieve what needs to be grieved, cultivate love and compassion and kindness, to not fall into despair, but to recall that we always have something to offer, to expand our perspective. And we cannot ever predict what's going to happen. To be clear about our delusions and to not give up, to develop resiliency, to return to the community, to the Sangha jewel, and cultivate a mind of unity, to practice kind speech, kind mind, generosity of heart, and to trust in our true nature. So I know she's going to write this up and post some of what she described for us in more detail last week. But listening to this, a few things occurred to me, so that's what I'd like to talk about today. The first is that all of these things, all of these practices are grounded in and return us to a basic orientation in our lives. And this orientation is one of remembering, cultivating, enacting interconnectedness with all being, not just with some beings, not just with the beings that we like or that are pretty or attractive to us, but with all beings. We talk a lot about interconnectedness. We return to it over and over again here because it's fundamental to the Buddha way. But we need to honestly examine how we do and don't experience it. And we need to encounter the healing capacity of it in our lives. Last night we watched a movie together that I think expresses and instructs us in one part of this, the ramifications and the lived experience of interconnectedness. And that movie is called The Power of Forgiveness. So both you and I highly recommend this movie. We've seen it a few times. It was made in 2007. And it's a movie about forgiveness, about the practice of forgiveness, from various perspectives. Many different people speak on the film, and they tell their stories, powerful stories, about what forgiveness is, what it isn't. Thich Nhat Hanh speaks of that when we uncover the heart of compassion, that forgiveness can grow from that. Elie Wiesel talks about the daunting task of even considering forgiveness in the face of horrors such as the Holocaust. Different religious traditions are represented, and the teachings about forgiveness and kindness, and stories of, for example, two men, one of whom his grandson killed the son of the other, and the path that they found together to teach and lead practices of forgiveness. So it's quite a beautiful movie. And if you're interested in it, if you weren't here last night and you're interested in it, I can give you the details about it after. So I was struck by how central the orientation of interrelatedness was, and the ground of compassion for self and others was in this movie, in these stories, how people found refuge in community and were supported in community, and in a fundamental sense that maintaining bonds of connection were essential, even with those that where it seems impossible and is impossible sometimes. That's one of the beauties of the movie. It's not a nicey-nice thing. This is very gritty. It's a very gritty tale about how it is impossible sometimes to have a certain feeling. It's more of a practice than it is a feeling. But it's about grace and effectiveness and relationship, about how we negotiate our world. It's about respect and how not to fall into the pit of despair or be driven by hatred, nurture hatred, revenge, but really seeing a vision where all of that can come to the fore. All of those feelings, all of those impulses can come to the fore, and yet we choose something else. It's about expressing our true nature. Really getting in the mud with it and finding a way forward. So the way we do this is by cultivating a practical and kind mind that takes into account our actual needs. Not what we think we need, or what we hope we need, or we think we should need, but what we actually need. And at the same time, challenge ourselves not to be trapped by our preconceived notions or ideas. So this is the seed of wisdom, right? This movie is about the cultivation of wisdom and the connection between wisdom and compassion, the way we would talk about it. The seed of wisdom is this very practical, kind orientation towards what's going to make this real in my life. And what we learn is that when we see in this way, we enter a new world. the world looks different. It doesn't look the same. And then I was thinking, with this orientation, we see a new world. But another way to flip that around is to say, when we step into a new world, we see differently. You know, we are changed. You see what I mean? We see differently, so we see a new world. But when we can't do that, sometimes when we pick ourselves up and put ourselves in a new place, we have a refreshing. Something changes. We change because we are a relationship, right? We are a relationship. So what is in our world changes us. It's a very interesting back and forth in that. So I that got me thinking about the Dungshan Caves. So Shinchu and I took some time off last month, and maybe no. And one of the things that we did, in fact, about the only thing we did, other than just get some rest, was we drove to L.A. To the Getty Museum, where they had this exhibit of the Dunhuang Caves. We had heard about these caves. We'd seen pictures of these caves. But we wanted to see them for ourselves. You know, we wanted to directly contact them as closely as we could without going to China. It just so happens that my boss went to China and saw the Dunhuang Caves. So we were joking that just while I was in L.A., he was in China. I thought, well, this is interesting. That's the closest I'm going to get, probably, is L.A. It took some effort and intention to get down there. You know? We didn't just fall out of bed and get to L.A. We had to drive. I was tired. You know? I just kind of wanted to just sleep. But I felt this desire to put myself in that position, to be there, to see it in person, and not just have it be abstract, at least as in person as I could get. So these caves are in western China along the Silk Road, what used to be the Silk Road. And one of the things that was interesting is that they had not just Buddhist texts there, but Christian texts and Jewish texts. Mm. They were, the first ones were dug out of a cliff in the 4th century, and they were, as they say, discovered by Europeans in 1900. So we wanted to encounter this world of these caves. And the thing that's interesting is that the Chinese government, as the French are doing, did in the south of France, they're building exact replicas of these caves so that you can go into the caves without destroying the caves. Because the caves are, you know, when people go in there, it changes them and they'll gradually disintegrate. So they built these exact replicas. And they transported these replicas to the Getty Museum. So you get to actually go into the caves. And the way they do it at the Getty is that you it's free. The Getty Museum is free. It's quite beautiful if you've never been there. And they organized it beautifully so that you get a ticket. And there's about 10 people at a time. And so you enter the cave in these small groups. There's three of the caves. Shinshu and I were the first in line in the morning. We're at the head of the line. So we walked into these caves. In a way, everybody was behind us. You know? We walked into these caves and just took my breath away. They're so beautiful. It's like walking into a different universe. And I was struck by how we populate our world with a certain idea about things, don't we? We walk around in our lives with a certain idea about the way things are. Mm-hmm. It's like we're walking around in a cave filled with all of our ideas about this person or that person or our jobs or whatever. That's the cave we walk in. And then you walk into this cave, and I'm going to show you some pictures here in a minute. You walk into this cave, and it's so beautiful, and you're surrounded by the Dharma, and something changes. It's just, oh. On the walls, on the ceilings, the Buddhas, the ancestors, the teachings, the devas, everything. It's like walking into the pure land. And you imagine, what would it be like to sit in this place or chant in this place? Or they don't know exactly for sure what they were. Some people say that they were donations from lay believers who wanted to kind of gain merit or whatever, but it doesn't really matter in a way. What matters is that they exist. So we can ask ourselves, who are we when we're in that cave? And who are we when we're in the cave that we create with our own minds? How are we different? I'd say that the Dunghwan caves connect us with who we are. We see things differently. We're reminded of something. I'd say that the person we want to be is the person we are when we're surrounded by such beauty and by the teachings. And there's no reason why we can't orient ourselves towards that way. This does not mean we put on rose-colored glasses. We don't see the suffering of the world. We don't see the suffering in our own hearts and minds. It doesn't mean that we live in some kind of a, I don't know, special place. It means that we expand our vision beyond our ideas and look for the beauty and look for the transformative power and look for and engage in supporting and realizing this beauty. So I'm going to show you some pictures, and I'd like you to think about how we might. I'll show them to you, and then you tell me if you can see them well enough. You can pass this around too. Okay, can you see this? Mm-hmm. This sky? You see that? You see how kind that face is? Thich Nhat Hanh says you should always have your Buddha in your house should always have a kind face. But who are you when you look at that kind face? You know, if that kind face populates your world, how does your life change? You know, this is part of what happens when we encounter the teachings. Part of what happens when we bow or when we is that we see a kind, we see differently. We are different, right? Don't you think? If you look at this and you think, when I am seen like that, when I see myself like that, when I see others like that, what happens? What happens at work? What happens in the grocery store? What happens with my partner, with my family, with my friends? you can see this. But this is the ceiling. I'll show you a couple pictures. This is the ceiling.
Is it, can I ask a question? Is it painted or is it carved?
It's painted. And then at the end, there's carved. But these are the ceilings that are painted. Okay?
Jaku, I can't see it at all. I don't know if other people can see
it. You guys can see it, okay? I'll pass these around.
All right.
Yeah. So, these are all, like, multiple Buddhas on the ceiling. So you go in, and you're, what covers you? What looks down on you? What covers you is all of the Buddhas and ancestors. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what fills your above you. So what is that like? What is that like when your world is populated by the Buddhas and ancestors? You know, when you see Buddhas and ancestors everywhere. Oh, hello, Buddha and ancestor. Hello. You know? This, the front of the book, and again, I'll pass this around if you can't see it very well. Take a look at it now or later. Is a deva, a celestial being, beautiful celestial being dancing. So do we see devas? In the clouds? The otters? The people? This was a little heavier. I don't know how well you'll be able to see this, but this is what one of the caves is like on the inside. So you can see what it's like to enter the room. Right? So you walk in, and this is above you, around you, surrounding you. This one you can't see very well, but you can look at it. And then a lot of them have statues at the end. Pass that around.
Are they guardians?
There's Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and guardians. Mm-hmm. But they're life size, and you go in and you see this.
Wow.
You encounter these statues in this beautiful place that surrounds you. And then, the last thing I want to show you, and I'll pass a postcard around to you, but I want to show you. This is a scroll.
Gosh.
Of all the ancestors, right? If they're pictures and names, they're all a little different. Some of them are kind of goofy looking. You know? And you think, oh, these are all the ancestors here. You know? I'll pass this around. This is a postcard of the same thing. This is only a small piece of the beautiful art that's there. You know, three caves, there's lots and lots more of them. And they're going to try and reproduce the whole thing. But the point I want to make is, again, this question of who are we when in the midst of a world when this is what we see? When this is the world that we see, how does that change us? And it poses two questions. One is, how do we see the world in this way? And the other is, when we don't see the world in this way, what do we practically do to help us remember that is the world that we can see in that way. You know, how do we pick ourselves up and create something, do something, be something that helps us remember? So when we choose to make that step to investigate our lives in this way, it requires learning to see in a certain way. And that in turn means that we need to cultivate courage and honesty and commitment. We need to cultivate a vision which we can see the beauty and dignity of all beings. In the same way, the people in this movie challenged themselves to not fall into hatred and despair, even if they felt those things, but to see, can I see beyond that? Can I envision a world in which something else is possible? In which I can actually see dignity and beauty, even in the midst of difficulty, beyond difficulty. Sometimes I've talked about the seduction of bitterness. Bitterness can be very seductive when we encounter hardship and great pain. We have to choose to aim for an expanded vision. And that takes courage. What some have called fudo heart. Talked about fudo in the past. Fudo is the fierce being who says, you're not getting away from the Dharma. I got my lasso. I'm going to get you. Bring you back. That's our tough heart. Tough in the sense of vital, Olympic. When we do this, we are released from a constricted view. Yeah. Our view is expanded and we are changed. We inhabit a different world. And it takes some effort for us to do this. But it's not special. It's not some magical world. Suzuki Roshi said, the world is its own magic. We move in concert with all beings in this. We see beauty, and beauty is fleeting. Life is fleeting. It's part of beauty, isn't it? So we make choices. We know that we need to refresh our bodies and minds, that we're not isolated beings, totally in control of our hearts and minds. We make an effort. We put ourselves in places in which we can be taught. This is particularly true and particularly important when it seems most difficult. When we feel isolated, overwhelmed, discouraged, that's the time we most need to gently and kindly and thoroughly challenge ourselves to expand our vision. So often we think we can think ourselves out of the spot we're in with the mind that got us there in the first place. Right. But we can't. So we need to cultivate a good dose of humility and orient ourselves a way in which we invite a broadened perspective until our vision clears and our hearts are lifted. So we invite ourselves to enter into particular dynamic relationship with all being, and and we receive something from that. This is what Dogen Zenji calls responsive communion. I've talked to this is one of my favorite phrases of his, responsive communion, that kind of intimacy. So, you know, this is an important part of our practice, and it has to do with beauty, and it has to do with forgiveness, and it has to do with the kind of vitality. It expresses the path of practice realization in a very concrete way. But there's only this moment, this confluence of causes and conditions. So we ask ourselves, how are we with this moment? What world are we living in this moment? How do we want to orient ourselves and care for ourselves and interact? So we cultivate and transform ourselves and our world in very concrete ways. We allow ourselves to be touched. We intelligently put ourselves places where we can be taught, like this. And, you know, we make that effort with kindness and Fudo heart.